Nearby Business on 90.3 Near FM with Declan Ralph and Dave Daly.
Hi there and welcome to the programme. I'm Declan Ralph.
And I'm Dave Daly.
Coming up on the programme today, in a moment, myself and Dave will have our usual discussion around some of the current business headlines from the local and national papers. In the business of this week, I'll be talking to David O'Toole from Grenca about how they provide smart business solutions to small and medium-sized business. Also, after that, that's Dave Daly, our own Dave, and I will look through the provisions of the budget from earlier in the week and highlight where it impacts business the most.
David Bell from the HR department will be here after that for his regular look. This week, David has reviewed the budget for...
Nearby Business on 90.3 Near FM with Declan Ralph and Dave Daly.
Hi there and welcome to the programme. I'm Declan Ralph.
And I'm Dave Daly.
Coming up on the programme today, in a moment, myself and Dave will have our usual discussion around some of the current business headlines from the local and national papers. In the business of this week, I'll be talking to David O'Toole from Grenca about how they provide smart business solutions to small and medium-sized business. Also, after that, Dave, that's Dave Daly, our own Dave, and I will look through the provisions of the budget from earlier in the week and highlight where it impacts business the most.
David Bell from the HR department will be here after that for his regular look to see where it impacts businesses from an HR point of view. And finally, Paul Dwyer from the EU Cyber Summit will be here to update us on that event. It's happening here in Dublin, in DCU, in fact, before the end of the month.
Now, if you'd like to get involved in the discussion or comment on any of the stories, you can contact the show by text while we are on the air to 087 69 44 500. That's 087 69 44 500. You can also get in touch anytime on Twitter at @nearby_business. #localbiz.
Nearby Business on 90.3 Near FM with Declan Ralph and Dave Daly.
So, Dave, a couple of stories in the news today. Mum's the World,
yes,
for children's wear designer.
Absolutely. A children's wear range designed in Ireland will go on sale in Brown Thomas next year under a new contract with fashion startup Kirby Designs. Established in Dublin in October 2017 by designer Karen Kirby Masterson, Kirby Designs has already secured an overseas listing with Mum's World Dubai, the biggest online children's outlet in the Middle East. Kirby Masterton established Kirby Designs, having worked at a women's wear designer for close on two decades for labels including Michael H. and the Personal Choice range. Having studied at the Grafton Academy of Fashion Design in Dublin, she decided to move into children's wear after the birth of her third child in August 2015. And the baby's birth was actually a catalyst for the starting of the business, said Kirby Masterson. At the time, my work was as a commercial designer. I was slowing down she worked for great companies like Michelle Ambers and Michael H. I remember all those. They had unfortunately all closed down. She said, I wanted to stay in the industry that I love. And then my mum gifted Fiad, who's the baby, a beautiful wool coat from Spain when she was a few months old. And she handed it to me and said, this coat will be the start of something special. Inspired by the gift, Masterson set about composing mood boards and selecting fabrics for a children's wear collection that she hoped would stand the test of time. And she said, export is key for Kirby. We have meetings lined up in Britain and the US for spring-summer 2019, their collection. She said, I really believe the years I've spent in the industry are starting to pay off and people are coming back to quality garments. Now, just to tell you that Kirby Designs is situated in Rush, County Dublin, and employs one pattern cutter.
That's great local story. Success story.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
Now, another company, a much larger company, but under pressure all the same, the owners of the Cuisine de France brand that are in Ireland here is owned by a company called Arista, and they're a big global organisation, but their back is to the wall at the moment, Dave.
Yeah, seriously, and this has been in the news bouncing around for the last few weeks. They're trying to soften up the dough, I think,
case,
yeah? Yeah. Troubled Irish Swiss food company Arista has confirmed its plan to raise $800 million, and that's a big amount of money, in equity, despite opposition from a shareholder, Cobas Asset Management. Commenting on the decision, Gary McCann, chairman of Arista, said the board has put forward a detailed multi-year turnaround plan which is in the best interest of all the shareholders. And in the absence of an $800 million capital raise, raise, Aritzia would be unable to fully implement this plan and the business and put the business back into a profitable path and rebuild value for all shareholders. So the funds raised will be used to repay a debt of approximately 500 million and to provide additional working capital funding and provide 150 million to fund the and to execute the group's Project Renew. That sounds like a political party. Following the capital's raise, the group's total capital structure leverage would remain above 5 times. However, the board said that it believes the strengthened balance sheet with a better debt maturity profile and additional liquidity and working capital funding provides the group with the time and financial flexibility to deliver its multi-year turnaround plan. It added, in the absence of the capital rise, the group would be subject to significant, and that's a word that's used in business to emphasise a very serious kind of a scenario,
yep,
significant commercial, operating and financial risk, and may have insufficient liquidity and working capital to sustain its business in the medium term. So it's sort of saying, we need to do this or else.
Or else we're in big trouble. Okay, we are keep a close eye on Brexit, obviously, on this programme as well, Dave. And Tony Blair...
Yeah, he's a kind of, we were just talking about him before the programme. I mean, he was a Labour MP and Labour Prime Minister, but he kind of looks kind of blue.
Closer to the Conservatives, yeah. He believes there's a 50-50 chance of a new Brexit vote based on the current happenings.
Yeah, he said he thinks Theresa May is unlikely to secure any a majority for any divorce deal in Parliament in the UK. Whatever Brexit deal is on offer is going to result in significant economic harm, Mr. Blair, who served as Prime Minister from 1997 to 2007. And he spoke to Reuters today. He said, I still believe it is possible that Brexit is stopped. I think there is no majority in Parliament for any proposition that the Prime Minister brings back, he said, adding that he wanted a second referendum. And he says there's less than 6 months to go before the UK exit from the EU, and there's little clarity about how the world's fifth largest economy, its preeminent international financial centre, will trade with the EU after Brexit. He said Mrs. May is trying to clinch a deal, but there's uncertainty as to whether she could sell it at home, where she will need the approval of the Parliament. Blair said the European regulators would not want the centre of European finance to be outside their orbit, so jobs would be lost in the financial sector. He said they've got to wake up to the fact that if you do Brexit, your number one priority is going to be keeping this place as an attractive place for investors to come.
The Business Of on Nearby Business on 90.3 Near FM.
I'm joined now by David O'Toole from Grenca. Hi, David.
Hi, Declan. How are you?
Very good. Yeah, very good. David, I suppose maybe we'll start off by just establishing who Grenca are and a little bit about the business, maybe a little bit about the history and just what you do. We'll work our way through it. Yeah,
absolutely, absolutely. Grenca have been actually in Ireland now for 14 years. We're going 40 years this year.
Okay.
We celebrated it. We offer not only leasing in Ireland, but invoice finance as well. But what most people don't realise is we're a bank.
Okay.
A private equity bank based in Germany.
Right. Okay. So a German origin 40 years ago.
Yeah.
14 years here. And give us a feel for, you mentioned invoice matching there, give us a feel for the other areas of that you're involved in and financing.
Yeah, so financing for us in Ireland is predominantly leasing, okay? Invoice finance comes in, its other name would have been factoring in the past.
I remember that from my days of economics in school, the factoring, yeah.
So basically where we take over the debtor's book, you know, and we then offer a higher percentage than anybody else in the marketplace back to the supplier and then pay the balance when we get paid.
Typically, what's the percentage you offer back to the government?
Honestly, it's not my sector. You're talking to the leasing guy today. So...
But this has been a problem with factoring in that, like they say, it's cheaper than an overdraft and all that kind of thing. But I mean, I remember looking at this some years ago, and they wanted about 20% or something like that. So I mean, a lot of people wouldn't even make that sort of margin, on an invoice. So if you were owed £1,000, they were taking 20% of it. So your margin, you may get the cash to pay the people who you bought the product from or your to help your manufacturing process. But the margins were very, very high.
Yeah. So. I know that Again, it's not my area, but from what I do know is that they offer up to 90% straight away.
Yeah.
And their fee comes out of the balance.
Okay.
You know,
okay. So it's less than 10%.
Certainly not 20%.
Yeah, okay.
You know?
Good, a good competitive factoring service. So, in terms of you mentioned leasing there, what's the attraction to businesses? You know, rather than just spending the capex on it, why would a business lease?
Major attraction is obviously they're not going to be spending the money. The write-off for businesses, typically when you buy something, is over 8 years. But the write-off when you lease is over the term of the lease.
Okay.
Okay, so that can be over 36 or 60 months.
Okay.
The other benefit, of course, well, is that they're claiming back the VAT on the payments. A lot of it at the moment is off balance sheet as well.
Okay, so that's the advantage of leasing over the capex. And in terms of leasing, what type of items would you lease? I mean, is it very large items, very small items, or what way does that work?
Everything, with the exception of vehicles. We don't do vehicles.
You don't do vehicles.
Yeah, it's one of those markets that we don't get involved in. But everything from IT, garage equipment, office furniture, drones. So we change with the times.
That would be definitely a new area, drones.
It is indeed. And it opened our eyes to their uses, because you see them, obviously, with companies doing surveys, but you also see it now in, you know, sea rescue.
Okay.
Something that we would never thought of.
And, I mean, can you give us a feel for the price of a drone? I mean, that type of professional drone. I mean, you can go and buy them in the usual outlets, but, like, what? Obviously, it's a substantial cost for this sort of professional working drone.
Yeah, drones can vary in price anywhere from, you know, a couple of thousand up to 20, 30, 40. From what I believe, the sky's the limit at the moment, pardon the pun.
It's a serious piece of kit.
Yeah.
And what... I'm sure over the years you've been asked to finance unusual items.
We have, yeah.
What's the most unusual item? You're laughing there now.
I won't mention some of the really unusual items. One of them, I'm not sure what you can say in the radio, is something called an endoscope, which is used for, obviously, internal surveys.
Yes, let's say. Yeah.
We've done those.
Okay.
We've done snow machines, not in Ireland, but certainly throughout Europe.
Okay. So. And in Ireland, anything else unusual that you're aware of?
Not really. I'm going to be honest with you. It's probably unusual to us because every week we seem to find something different.
Okay.
People will come to us with ideas or equipment that, you know, you'd never heard of.
Yeah.
You know, so we've done machines, let's say, that package hair gel.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah.
Just things that you just
don't see. They're kind of once off. Yeah.
They're never really once off, because what we find is we get an awful lot of repeat business.
Okay.
You know, so where people might buy, and companies might buy equipment, they look to upgrade it in, you know, 3 to 5 years' time, or expand, because primarily we're dealing with growing companies.
Yeah. And, I mean, when you come to make an assessment on a company, what sort of factors are you looking at?
Really, the underwriters will look at just the strength of the company themselves. How long have they been trading, you know, what's their balance sheet like? A lot of factors. And of course, when you look at a company, you have to take into account what they've done, you know. So certainly I know the underwriters do look across the board. So they might say, well, okay, their balance sheet mightn't look great. They've been around a long time, but why doesn't it look great?
Okay.
You know, so they do tend to go and delve into an awful lot of detail. But it could be that they've bought their property, that they've, you know, have an aggressive expansion plan.
Okay.
You know, a lot of factors, but they do take that into account.
Right, so that sort of overview of the whole company, not just necessarily the fine financial lines.
Yeah.
And, I mean, in terms of a term of a lease, you mentioned there, you know, 36 months or whatever. Is that a typical term, or what's the sort of longest term you would do?
Longest term would be 5 years.
5 years,
yeah.
Okay.
Typically. You know, it is based on not so much the lifespan of a product, but, you know, there's only so far you'll get a warranty.
Okay.
As simple as that.
Yeah.
And just to say to you, what makes you different from the banks? I mean, I know you're probably more the what you've just described there to us as you know, you look at different things other than the balance sheet, which is welcome, I have to say. Myself and Declan are involved in business. I run my own business, and there are things over the recession and all that would have just been black and white. If you didn't have it, you didn't get it, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it's when you most needed it, you didn't get it. But I think I welcome that they would look at your longevity and how you've traded in the difficult years, and you did this and you did that, and you're not paying yourself sort of huge money, and you're conducting yourself obviously in it, Craig. So what sets you apart from the banks then, with those things in mind?
The major difference between Grenke and the banks is, one, your decision time. So we generally give a decision within 20 minutes. Right. You know, so when we partner with businesses, as they send in proposals, they're getting a decision within 20 minutes.
That would be for someone you know?
That would be coming from a partner as they propose a new client.
Okay.
So decision time is very, very quick.
Right.
We have local underwriters. So that really sets us apart. The other factor is, of course, we provide 100% finance, whereas a lot of other banks and a lot of other companies don't.
Okay. Do you have an upper limit?
No.
No.
We have a lower limit, though.
You have a what's the lower limit?
500 euros.
500 euros. Yeah. Okay, so but you've no upper limit.
No,
sky's the limit there.
People don't use fax machines anymore. That would fall nicely into the category of the telephone systems, I suppose, is something ideally that you
absolutely
would fund.
Yeah, absolutely.
And but office equipment, computer systems, and things like that, and stuff again that can be repossessed. I just dare I say. And when things go wrong, how does that work?
Yeah, when things go wrong, we're not like again other companies. We try and keep everything in-house, so we deal with people on a one-to-one basis. So people who engage are engaging with Grenke directly, as opposed to a collections company. What you'll find is that we will try and work with the company. So we'll try and reschedule their payments. We'll try and understand exactly what's gone wrong. And as a worst-case scenario, we have to repossess it.
Yeah.
We have to try and make our money back.
Yeah, I suppose the last thing you want back is a endoscope or a drone. I mean, what do you do? What would you?
I tell you where I to suppose put it. Actually,
well, I'm just thinking. What would you actually do if it did get to that? And as you say, hopefully it doesn't get to that. You go through all the process. But what do you do with the item? Do you sell it off? Do you try and find somebody else to take it on? Yeah.
Typically, we'd have an asset company who would try and sell those items on and reclaim some of the cost.
Right.
Yeah.
And how is business at the moment?
Business in Ireland is great.
Yeah.
You know, we've been here since, as I say, 14 years. We've been through the hard times. We've continued to grow. This year alone, our team in Fingal has actually grown from 4 to 7.
Okay.
You know, so it's been really good.
It's been good. And you mentioned that you're based in Fingal. You have a branch of Fingal. You mentioned local underwriters. So you are in communities and based locally around
absolutely.
The country. Yeah,
absolutely. So we do. We have an office in Sandyford. And that covers PLC, so we actually have a bank presence here, although we don't have we don't do commercial banking in Ireland. Then we have invoice finance based there as well, and leasing. And then we have an office in Cork.
Okay.
And we have an office in Belfast.
In Belfast as well. So you're all over there. Does Grenke operate in any other countries outside of Germany?
Yeah, we do indeed. We're present now in 31 countries throughout the world.
Okay, so it's a big global business.
It's a big global business at the moment, yeah.
What about we tend to ask people this question about social media. I mean, from a Grenke point of view, is that an important part of the business or not?
It is becoming an important part of the business because, you know, we have to change with the times just like everybody else. We found that, and I found certainly that there are a lot of customers come to us through our social media, through what we see, what we post. Whereas before it would have been kind of a blanket no.
Right.
And in the last year or two, it's certainly gathered a bit of
Twitter, Facebook,
LinkedIn
and radio advertising. I hear you on mainstream radio as well.
That's right.
Yeah.
I mean, really, people have to get to know who Grenke are. Most people haven't heard of us, but they may have had a photocopier through us. You know, so it is a case of letting people know who we are, so when our partners and we go directly to people, they can go, oh yeah, Grenke, I've heard of you.
Yeah, and do you work with office equipment suppliers and all, like, we can finance that for you kind of thing? And
absolutely.
That's a big market for you.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, it's great, David, that you came in and told us a little bit more about Grenke than we knew before. In terms of future plans here, what does the future hold for leasing in general or for Grenke?
For Grenke, we'll continue to expand. The market is there. What other products will come in, I don't know. At the moment, we have master lease facilities, which are there for companies we deal with directly, basically like a project pot. Invoice finance is relatively new in Ireland for us, but they continue to bring out new products throughout the world, and hopefully they'll test them in Ireland first.
Brilliant. Okay, as I said, thanks a million. That's David O'Toole there from Grenke telling us all about that particular business. Thanks very much again for coming in. We're going to take a short break, and myself and the other Dave that's in the studio, our own Dave Daly, we're going to look through the budget and see how it impacts a business here locally and a little bit further afield. Back in a moment.
You're listening to Nearby Business on 90.3 Near FM. Every Thursday at 6 p.m., the local, national and international business news headlines with a focus on what affects us here in northeast Dublin. Regular features on the programme will include the Business Of section, where each week a different industry or industry leader will be here to chat about what makes their business work. The latest tool and technology needed to make sure your business remains at the leading edge. HR issues will be discussed, as well as a particular focus on looking at matters from the employer's point of view. Being an entrepreneur can be a lonely pursuit, so there'll be a regular look at what supports are available for business in the local area. And a host of special features as well. Don't forget, if you would like to get involved in the discussion or comment on any of the stories, you can text while the show is on the air to 087 69 44 500 or at any time on Twitter at @nearby_business. Near FM's business programme is Nearby Business.
Yeah, so budget happened earlier in the week, budget 19, and we're going to have a quick look now, myself and David, at some of the implications for businesses. And the first one is, good news is that the corporation tax rate is to remain the same.
Yeah, 12.5% to remain, even though some of our partners in Europe would complain about that. That's what it is. It's often mentioned that the effective rate for some of the large multinationals is a lot less than that when diluted with grants and all that kind of thing. But in the budget this year, the corporation tax rate for the rest of us, those in business on a day-to-day basis, is remaining at 12.5%. And the next thing, there was no mention of any expansion of the entrepreneurs' relief for capital gains tax. So the existing limit of 1 million, and that's subject to 10% tax rate, would appear to set to continue in place for 2019.
Sometimes the devil is in the detail in the budget, and sometimes when they actually produce the Finance Act or the Finance Bill, a lot of this other bit sort of creep into it as well.
Yeah,
they
put provisions in that you don't see on the day. That's correct. I believe that's the case. A former revenue person told me that one time. Watch out for the actual paper when it comes out.
The actual bill.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, as well, it was probably well signposted, but they have for the tourism and hospitality sector, they've raised the VAT rate back up to 13.5%, where they had taken it down temporarily to the 9%.
Yeah, that was something that the hotel people themselves kind of got themselves into a little bit of bother here, because the price of a hotel in Dublin was €250 a night, and they said, well, the tax rate reduction has done its job. So it would see an increase in VAT rate. The overseas visitor numbers have increased, and the sector will see a VAT increase of 13.5% from January 2019, up from the 9%. There will be no changes to the reduced VAT rate of 13.5% or standard VAT rate of 23% in 2018. So the other VAT rates on labour and then goods that are sold on will remain, but the hospitality one has seen to have done its job.
And I think you're right, the sector probably talked themselves out of that.
Yeah.
Even though a lot of commentary from people located outside of Dublin, they're saying, well, that's fine for the people in Dublin, but you know, come out to the West Coast or the South Coast and it's not as good. Yeah. As it is in Dublin, and we'd like to retain it, but obviously that battle has been lost now.
It's probably very hard unless you're living in a federal sort of Ireland where we've different states that they can introduce different rates.
There was some suggestion of that by some of the opposition, believe it or not. to come up with a federal system for Dublin versus the rest. Yeah. An interesting one I picked up on, Dave, is, which I didn't know, electronic newspapers had a different VAT rate than a printed paper.
Yeah, I didn't realise this either. A reduction in VAT for electronic newspapers from 23% to 9%, and VAT on printed newspapers will stay at 9%. So it was high, obviously something to do with the way it was transferred or whatever, but it's gone down to 9%. So I'm not sure if the newspaper people with the printed papers would be happy with that, but they're all involved in that now anyway, with subscriptions and whatever. They can't hold back the tide, so they're probably just getting in there.
Getting involved. It's good that it's synchronised the two VAT rates there. There was also a lot of chat about no measures in here for the environment and our carbon footprint, but there's a couple of small things there on hybrid vehicles and diesel vehicles.
Yeah, the Ministry is extending the VRT relief for hybrid vehicles until 2019, and there will be a 1% surcharge for diesel vehicles across all VRT brands. And something actually we just forgot to mention there earlier on, there's no change in capital gains tax rate, and the inheritance tax threshold for Class A, that's parents to children, it will increase by 10,000 from 310 to 320,000.
Important for small businesses as well.
Yeah, perhaps, yeah, and farms and all that business, yeah. I suppose, yeah.
Yeah, indeed, further afield from where we are. On property, some interesting measures here.
Yeah, this is one that's come in for a bit of criticism. Full removal of the restriction on the amount of interest that may be deducted by landlords in respect of loans used to purchase, improve or repair their residential property. Now, on the face of it, that looks like it's going to open the gates for people to spend loads of money on refurbishments and all that kind of thing.
So effectively, 100% of the interest now can be is allowable against tax. Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, this has drawn ire from certain sectors, one of them being Paddy Cosgrave, who we spoke about last week. And he's the Web Summit founder. And he said that if the government wants to take a canister of petrol and just throw it onto the property market, that's their prerogative. Now, he was referring to the budget announced by the Minister of Pascal on Tuesday. To introduce a mortgage interest deductibility for speculators is one thing. I believe it's uncapped. Not even Donald Trump, when he did he give his giveaway budget for the 1%, dared to make mortgage interest deductibility uncapped. That's probably €1 billion in the back pocket of the richest people in the country. I don't understand it. He added that he believes that the decision was taken to mould Fine Gael's own electoral base. It's the same as providing tax subsidies to the biggest coffee chains in the world operating in Ireland. He continued, he went off on a rant here, didn't he?
He surely
Speaking
did.
To the independent.ie, Mr. Cosgrave went on to say that if the government is going to give mortgage interest rates deductibility, they should give it to everybody and have the debate. I do agree with that, because we're actually, the normal folk are actually getting, that's been reduced as we go along, and it's nearly gone for most people.
Yep.
He added that he didn't think there would be a housing crisis if there was more debate and discussion, and part of that involves creating a truly free press. So he's had a swipe in a few directions, and that's the man who took his business away.
Took
to
it
Portugal.
Away. Anyway, it's been described as the election budget. What do you think?
Yeah, it's just in the breaking news this evening, and the minister has resigned, as you know.
Minister Loughton, yeah.
Resigned, and he had a little swipe at Leo and said that this is all about popularity contests and numbers instead of actually getting on with things. So maybe we're in the path of an election. Although I was listening to another broadcaster on TV last night, and he was saying that he reckons it's what's going to come out of the Brexit discussions is whether Leo is going to go for an election, and they think it's the 7th of December that he'll go for. If they get a deal on the Brexit, that things will be worked out, it'll be high people rather than doing it in January. He's never worked, and go for it in December after a good deal coming out of the discussions into the December summit on the Brexit deal. So maybe Leo will go and get that sorted out. But he's embarrassed today, I think, by what's happened with this. The three extra dinners were mentioned today with the man from Mr. McCourt, David McCourt. And the minister was kind of had to go back and say, well, I did have another dinner. Actually, there's another three.
Reflection, as they
and
as somebody once said.
They were described at this stage as happy meals anyway.
Just before we finish on the budget, a couple of things that affect everybody. Of course, they put 50 cent on cigarettes, if that's your thing. We're going to be talking to David Bell now shortly about how it inflects HR issues, so employee and employer issues. Also interesting, Dave, to see 800 new Gardaí will be recruited.
Yeah, and I don't know when that's going to happen. Did they mention it? They do this, you know, that might be at the end of November next year or something like that. You know, the kind of thing. So the actual real effect of that on the ground is we need them, because, I mean, the fact is that the population is growing. So if you look at it in terms of policing, which is to be there, to be seen, very, very invisible at the moment in urban areas, the Gardaí, and that's they're not on the beat. The Garda station's closed down. They consolidated the ones. I know the one in Ballymun and Santry's only a daytime one. Whitehall is gone. Various different ones have been closed down. So I know there are local issues that people have been concerned about. So more Gardaí on the beat, on the ground, would probably be a good thing.
A good thing. Indeed it would. Okay, coming up in the second part of the show, as I said, we have David Bell now shortly. David's going to be talking about Budget 19 as well and how it impacts on business from a HR point of view. And after that, live in the studio here, we'll have Paul Dwyer. He's the CEO of ICTTF. And Dave is going to talk to him about that and explain what that is all about. All that coming up in a couple of moments.
Download the podcast and catch up on your listening at near.ie. Near FM.
Hello, this is Roger O'Sullivan inviting you to join me every Sunday between 12 o'clock and 2 o'clock for the Music Arcade Show, where we'll feature a whole hour of 60s tracks from the corresponding week between 1960 and 69, and a whole hour of an eclectic mix of rock, pop, blues, folk and everything else in between from the best of Irish and international artists. So that's the Music Arcade Show every Sunday, 12 o'clock to 2 o'clock, with me, Roger O'Sullivan, here on Near FM.
Don't forget to listen out for The Art Show, each Tuesday.
With a mixture of music, theatre, film, reviews, interviews and live studio performances. Many from local artists and musicians.
The Art Show, Tuesdays.
Tuesday evenings at 7.
It's showtime.
Once in every show, there comes a song like this. It starts off.
I came home to people. They need to adore me. So Christian,
shut up, I'm rich. Not some platinum blonde bitch. I'm so
power of the music. Of
for a great night out, Tuesday afternoon, tune in at 2 p.m.
Did you know that you can listen to 90.3 Near FM and watch programmes from Near TV on the move? Download one of the free radio apps and listen on your smartphone. Check out our podcasts via iTunes and Android. And while you're on the move, watch Near TV programmes on YouTube, 90.3 Near FM. Near TV, a move in the right direction.
This is 90.3.
This is Near FM.
And welcome back to the programme. Don't forget, if you'd like to get involved in the discussion or comment on any of the stories, you can contact the show by text while we're on air. The number is 087 69 44 500. That's 087 69 44 500. Or you can contact me anytime on Twitter. We're at @nearby_business, #localbiz.
Your HR questions answered on Nearby Business.
Now, David Bell from the HR department is here for his regular look at HR issues. And this week, David, you've reviewed Budget 19 for us to see where it impacts business from a HR and employment point of view. How are you?
Great, Declan. Good evening to you.
There are a number of provisions in there that you've some widely known and some not really reported much at all yet.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think I'm certainly no economic expert or anything of the that nature, but I think generally there wasn't a huge amount to be getting too excited about.
No.
I think generally a lot of these, as with all those the budgets in recent years, that anything that's going to be either controversial or exciting is already well in the public domain. But as you say, I think in some ways, and I heard yourself and Dave talking just before the break, you know, there's a few things that maybe because they're being highlighted again, people might be aware of, or, you know, things that have been extended that some businesses might be aware of from the last budget. So in that sense, there are some things worth reminding ourselves. But yeah, the general changes, like minimum wage has gone up by a very modest amount. So from an employee's perspective, you know, 25 cents an hour isn't going to cause too much excitement. But of course, as an employer, you know, it is going to have an impact, and is going to, you know, as of the 1st of January, no different to the USC, the taxation, that always has an impact. Most people have their payroll or do, you know, that their software will update and all that. But it's just for people who are out there who do employ people, employers, that is obviously going to have a change.
Yeah,
they just need to be aware of it.
And I suppose if you have a large number of employees, that's a significant cost to a business as well.
It is. And yeah, Especially where there's hourly rates and, you know, they're in the 1st of January and they will need to make sure that those changes are implemented as of that date. And as I said, in relation to income tax, USC, there are changes, but that's more bordering into the accountants and the payroll area. But they do obviously affect employers, there's no doubt, as you say, when you add them all up, it is going to be an additional cost that's going to have to be paid by employers.
and some changes as well to employers, the employer's part of the PRSI contribution.
Yes, so the contribution have increased, again, in terms of percentages. It doesn't seem to be a lot, but of course when you add it all up, so there's going to be a percentage of 0.1 to the training levy, and then a further 0.1 will take effect in 2020. And then there's an increase of the employer's PRSI, for increase from 376 to 386 per week. So, I mean, that again, you know, you're looking at modest on the face of it, but it depends on how many staff you have, you know. And of course, these are all going to be additional taxes. There's no way around it. And depending on the employer themselves and depending on the size of their workforce, it is going to have an impact on them, yeah.
And I suppose one that's more for employees than employers is the extension of the zero percentage rate for BIK, that's benefit in kind, for electric vehicles, which makes them, from the employee's point of view, much more favourable than a diesel or a petrol.
Yes, and I think, again, I suppose this is all part of the, you know, there's a lot currently about the fact that electric cars, you know, seem to be the way that people are going. And, you know, if you listen to people talking about the future, that electric cars, I know there are great targets being set, but I think the vast majority of people accept that at some stage, most of us who are going to be around for the next few years, the next time, are going to own an electric car. I think that's the way it's going. So this is just part of that. And as you say, you know, certainly if someone, particularly, you know, maybe people who aren't doing enormous distances could start looking at that, because it's been extended for 3 years, which, you know, I suppose is an incentive in itself. So you don't have to worry for 3 years about paying any BIC. And also the market value of the vehicle could be up to 50,000, which, you know, obviously electric cars are more expensive. You're not going to be buying your...
It rules out the Tesla. Yeah.
But, you know, obviously there's a wide range of more reasonably priced electric cars. So I think that's certainly something that is if people are thinking of changing. And some of the, I know, you know, I think I read recently Dunleary County Council have started to bring in a fleet. Some of their fleet vans are going to be electric for the people who aren't travelling enormous distances around the city. So, you know, I think it is something that employers should bear in mind if they are changing cars, or they're looking in the next few years to change their fleet vehicles, or the employee is looking to buy a company car with the car allowance, and they're looking at what their tax implications for that would be. That's certainly something to bear in mind.
Indeed it is. And something we talked only recently about, maternity leave and parental leave and all that, and something that you flagged at the time has come to pass, that 2 extra weeks leave.
Yes, and, you know, the minister has, as they always do, they look to the future, and they're talking about an additional 7 extra weeks, which would be, you know, again, this is it's always increased in 2013 to 18 weeks in a 12-month period, and now it's going to be increased again. So I suppose that is a positive development for employees. You know, one always has to be very careful. These are statutory leaves, and there's always good reasons for them. But, you know, certainly the majority of my clients mightn't be overly, you know, another leave that means someone's out of the workplace. But, look, I think all of these things are coming from a place where, you know, workplace flexibility, family time, where, you know, both parents, in the vast majority of cases, are working, and to try and encourage people to have that work-life balance in a more positive way. So whilst I know there are employers probably who are looking at that saying not another increase in whatever the leave is, but, you know, of course it has to be balanced with the benefit to the employee.
Sure. Something I had never heard about, David, you flagged to me earlier, is the KEEP program. KEEP, KEEP. I didn't know it was in existence, but they've actually altered it and improved it a bit. So could you try and explain that to us?
Yeah, it is a bit, you know, it's probably better to visually explain it, but I will do my best. But the reason probably, Declan, you didn't hear about it, because no one's ever taken it up. I think in its infancy, or the idea behind this is for employers who want to incentivize, you know, key employees to stay within the organization. The tax treatment of share options and giving them some shares or a stake in the company were very, you know, they were deemed to be quite penal. They weren't very attractive. There was a lot of, and again, you know, a lot of tax implications around them. So it was very difficult to put into place a structure that made sense. So what they've tried to do is they've tried to make it a bit more attractive. So the basic thing is you have people who get share options in the company. It doesn't have to be, as I said, it's aimed at small to medium, so SMEs. It's not publicly quoted companies that they're after. It's
okay.
More smaller private companies. So the idea being that you give them share options, and whilst they do, any gain that the employee might make would be capital gains tax, liable for capital gains tax at 33%, which is the, if they sell those shares and they make a gain, they will pay 33% of the gain in the normal way. It is exempt from income tax, USD, employee PRSI contribution. So I think the problem was in the past, also they've increased the market value of the shares. That, you know, again, I think there's over, you know, up to 100,000 in the first year assessment, and they've lifted certain limits they had in relation to limits that they had. And all of it was because, to be perfectly honest, as I said, it was none of this was ever done. You know, that's my understanding of it, that this was around before, but as you said, very few people knew about it, and no SME apparently put it into place according
and
to
I suppose
the commentary that I read.
Yeah, it's an attempt, I suppose, to help SMEs to grow and keep the key employees who are important to that growth, I suppose, so they don't go off maybe
exactly.
to a larger organisation where this type of scheme or something similar might exist.
Yes, I mean, you know, in most PLCs, public liability companies, or even large private companies, there's probably some formal, you know, share option scheme based on service, based on seniority, based on performance. So often they will, you know, if you work for one of the public limited companies, if you are in a certain category, you will be given share options, so you're able to purchase shares at a lower value than they are at the current time, on the basis that you will then, it's in your interest to stay in the company because you have a vested interest, possibly at a secondary level, to work that bit harder, because obviously if everyone performs better, the share price will increase, and you have an interest in that happening. And then you are able to dispose of those shares under certain conditions. And obviously you are entitled then to take the gain on that share transfer, that share disposal. Of course, you pay tax on it.
Sure.
And this is an attempt to try and replicate that in the smaller businesses, because it would be unusual. And I mean, you know, I suppose when you read about them, you see, you know, some of the tech startup companies, a lot of these bio mechanical and medical companies that start up, you'll often see when they are sold or if they ever float, that most of the staff, certainly the staff who are there at the beginning and in the early years, are all have share options,
yeah,
of some sort. It's, yeah, a more common, I suppose, now in certain sectors and certain industries, but it's still, certainly on my experience, I probably can count on one hand the amount of clients that I've had in the last whatever years, 16 years, who have gone down that road. So I think it generally is for companies that have a very high growth and have, you know, their primary aim is to actually, you know, get bought by someone.
To sell, yeah.
Or to float, or to go on some sort of stock exchange. And there, so everyone knows the plan and people are given what they call skin in the game. So to as you say, to basically, part of the reason to keep them, it's an attraction for people, because often these options are lost if you leave.
Yeah, and I suppose it's a way of keeping salary levels to a more modest level in the sort of hope that at point there's a dividend for everybody at a future
exactly.
date. Yeah.
It is an incentive, and it's often given in lieu of a bonus or in lieu of you know, not maybe commission on sales, but certainly in lieu of a bonus, that this is a. Yeah, so it from a cash flow perspective, it certainly would help the company.
Yeah, and something else that you flagged to us a while back when we were chatting was this real-time reporting, and it's upon us now, and it's coming in from January.
Yeah, so again, I suppose it comes down to the accountants. I'm getting, in fairness, plenty of emails with information, and I'm getting letters from the revenue telling me that all of this PIY modernization. So, yeah, it's as of the 1st of January 2019. In simple terms, the revenue have to be notified by employers of every payment they make. And, you know, the revenue, as I said, any business person who's registered with the revenue will have got a letter in recent times. I myself received one, just reminding people. So anyone who hasn't contacted their accountant or contacted the people who do their payroll, I think would be advised to do so, because, you know, once October ends, we're only maybe 5 or 6 weeks to Christmas, and there won't be anything being done in the second half of December for a lot of people. So they just need to make sure that they've contacted whoever does that, or if they do it themselves, to make sure that their software, if they use software, is up to date and ready for us. Yeah.
Excellent. David, as usual, a comprehensive look at that particular topic, and thanks a million for taking the time to review the budget for us and to outline all those various changes to us this evening. Thanks a million. I think I've lost David at the very end
of
the
Declan,
call.
Thank you, sorry. Yeah, thank you. Nice.
You're distracted.
Stop. I was falling asleep at the budget, Declan.
Stop. Never. I've got to say, I've never seen David Bell stuck for words, but there you go.
No.
Okay.
Thanks,
we'll talk to you next week. Take care. David Bell there of the HR department, and thanks to him again for taking the time to look through that budget. In a moment, we're going to be talking to Paul Dwyer. He's the CEO of ICTTF. We'll find out more about them when Dave chats to him in just a moment.
You're listening to Nearby Business on 90.3 Near FM. Every Thursday at 6 p.m, the local, national and international business news headlines with a focus on what affects us here in Northeast Dublin. Regular features on the programme will include the Business Of section, where each week a different industry or industry leader will be here to chat about what makes their business work. The latest tool and technology needed to make sure your business remains at the leading edge. HR issues will be discussed, as well as a particular focus on looking at matters from the employer's point of view. Being an entrepreneur can be a lonely pursuit, so there'll be a regular look at what supports are available for business in the local area. And a host of special features as well. Don't forget, if you would like to get involved in the discussion or comment on any of the stories, you can text while the show is on the air to 087 69 44 500. Or at any time on Twitter at @nearby_business. Near FM's business programme is Nearby Business.
Welcome back to Nearby Business here on Near FM. Paul Dwyer, CEO of ICTTF, is here now to update us on the EU Cyber Summit that's happening here in Dublin before the end of the month. Now, that stands for International Cyber Threat Task Force. So it's not easy to say that before you've had your tea, but there, we got it out anyway. Paul, you're very welcome to Near FM.
Thank
you for coming in. Your company is called the ICTTF. Who are they and what do you do? Maybe?
So let me first explain. The company I work on a day-to-day basis is called Cyber Risk International, and we provide cyber security-related service to lots of corporates across Ireland and mainland Europe. What ICTTF was a passion project that started about 8 years ago. And what we did is we formed a virtual not-for-profit organisation, and it was originally called the Irish Cybercrime Task Force. And the first time we put on a meeting, over 60 people turned up in the snow. It was the last time we had the big snow. And we found very interesting. So many people were involved in that. So we put on an event, the first EU Cyber Summit, and over 400 people flew from all over the world. And within a few months, we had members from over 100 countries. And we had thousands of members signing up onto the website that wanted to become part of our mission. And our mission was, we used an Irish phrase, Niarca Curla Caela, which meant in unity there's strength, because all the bad guys are working together and sharing information. And we thought this was a great way for the good guys to come together and share information, help each other and teach each other.
And why did you do this? Like, obviously, you just explained it there. So the bad guys are kind of, it's a bit like organized crime in a way on online and
absolutely
all that kind of thing. So you're effectively, are you going to monitor it? Are you going to police it? Are you going to fight it? What's your
No, our mission really is that the threat actors come in many shapes and forms. I mean, you can have cyber threat actors that are effectively want to if you like attack a child. You have ones that attack small businesses, ones that attack large businesses. Okay. Lots of different kinds of threat actors out there. And as I say, we recognize that all the bad guys work together in their various different silos. Mm. So you'll have cyber criminals working with cyber terrorist related stuff, with pedophiles, working with different people in different groups. Mm. And we said, well, look, why don't we get all the good guys working and collaborating together? This is about sharing information. This is about keeping abreast of the latest and the greatest of what's happening on. And hence the EU Cyber Summit over the years has developed. And many thought it was hitting its pinnacle last year in the Helix when we had Edward Snowden live from exile in Moscow. And we held an interview with him.
Right. And why Dublin?
Because I'm Irish and very proud of Ireland, and as president of the ICTTF, we see it as an opportunity to shine the light on Irish companies. Some of the best cyber experts in the world come from Ireland. And whether that's around psychology, whether that's around law enforcement, and whether that's around solutions, you look at Stripe, you look at what's going on in Interpol, everything, all the head people or Irish people that are heading up these types of things. So we have an innate ability around this area, going back, if you like, maybe even to the Ohm stones and cryptography and those sort of things. So we seem to have it. Also, as Irish people, we're an amazing communicator. So it's a great way to showcase Irish talent, solutions and businesses to a European audience. So as tempted as we are to turn this into commercial business, we never have. Yes, we formed a company because we've been able to employ people now and run this as a big event every year. But the mission is simply to help people understand what these threats are. And that's why every year we will have different elements from the ISPCC to small business units right up to national infrastructure being protected. And it's about as much hearing from sponsors and solution experts as well as peer groups. So for this year, we have a particular focus on the financial sector, because the financial sector is under absolute massive attack from cyber gangs and entities, and a lot of them are nation state condoned and supported. So we're hearing from lots of the banks from around Europe are turning up to say how they're dealing with these things.
Okay, and where is it on?
It's on in the Helix in the DCU campus, and we find that a fantastic venue as well. We have the whole entire place on October the 24th.
Very good.
We'll also live stream the event as well for those that can't actually make it to it. Again, undermining the thing that are underlining the fact that this isn't about us making money or anything like that. It's actually about getting people there and training people. So we have lots of support from the DCU as well and their own student force that are going to help out with the event as well. So it's very much a camaraderie type thing around dealing with these kinds of threats.
And a speaker lineup, do you have it? Can you name anybody or perhaps who have you got there?
Absolutely. We have an eclectic mix, I would say. Everybody from Lucinda Crichton. We have Jamie Bartlett, who's a BBC broadcaster and an author. We have Chuck Giorgio, ex-FBI. We have myself. We have about 50, 60 amazing speakers that are going to be there, including the winner of The First Apprentice, Michelle Dubry, who's on Sky News. We have it will all culminate in this live interview again between myself and Snowden in Moscow.
That sounds really, really good. And I can see Declan's moving around there and getting animated. There's a lot of media in this, Declan, isn't there?
Yeah,
it's great, in fairness.
It's excellent, yeah. And you mentioned there at the start the main area is corporate.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. And you said your focus this year is on the banking.
Yeah.
What other corporate areas or sectors are highly targeted as well?
Well, highly targeted at the moment, you'd be amazed. Agribusiness is a huge targeted area at the moment, because agribusiness relies on things like drones. You mentioned earlier about financing drones and things like this.
Yeah,
and they're very much up on technology on what they have to use. But the bad guys know this. And in many cases, things that are based around national infrastructure or what we call SCADA-based system or industrial control systems that would be used in the likes of banks or water utilities and those kinds of areas, they'll attack the features of these things, not necessarily vulnerabilities within them, because these things were made to be easy to use but not necessarily secure. So it's easy pickings for these guys. And bad guys are the best entrepreneurs in the world. That's why when they set up websites in the dark net, they'll turn $1 billion in a year in their first year. They leverage technology. They're leveraging artificial intelligence so they can scale. So if we think we've seen something in, you know, a heyday of attacks on small businesses to large businesses like Facebook, you've seen nothing yet, because what's coming ahead in 2019 is going to be unbelievable.
And you said they're entrepreneurs and they scale up very quickly, make a lot of money.
Yeah.
Is the day where, you know, the guy in the not to stereotype too much. You know, in the shed, in the dark room.
Yeah, the guy sitting in the toga with the Smarties and the cans of Coke.
And just doing it for the crack, just because he can.
Yeah,
is
those guys are there. But those guys ultimately become actually victims of the organised cyber criminals. So let me explain. A lot of the people who get caught in this area are people or children who are essentially victims because they suffer with autism or Asperger's syndrome. Okay. And they're targeted by organised cyber criminals. Organised cyber criminals are flash men and women that are going around making lots of money and everything else like that. They are not sitting there trying to, you know, code their way in, but they will leverage these people and they'll entice them and they'll groom them and become part of what they feel is a community. So when you look at the arrest records in the UK or even indeed Ireland, you'll find a lot of them will have issues like that, learning difficulties, whatever, but they've got brilliant, fantastic brains that are absolutely ideal for this. And unfortunately, especially in the UK, what society does is puts them into criminal university, aka prison.
Right.
And they just become more leveraged and more used to that whole area.
Yeah, it's excellent. Yeah.
And just on the day, let's get back to the DCU. You're right, it's a great venue. And you've got all this, you've got a place, the space, you've the theatre, you've the lobby, you've upstairs, you've the actual O'Reilly Hall. So you've got, it's ideal for this kind of event. So there's probably a great buzz around on the day.
It's a fantastic atmosphere. There really is. I mean, last year it was really became electric because on the day we caused traffic mayhem outside. So we're starting it earlier this year. We're starting at 8:30, trying to avoid some of the traffic hassles and issues there. But really the reality of it is that the best of the best are turning up into Dublin. Last year we had about 300-400 people flying in from sea level, people flying in to sit in the Mahoney Hall in that big space, which is a strategic stream that we're talking about. Then we have an operational stream where we talk about the how do you do things. So for example, strategic wise, we might talk about digital transformation. How do we handle this in our business? How do we embrace blockchain? How do we do whatever it needs to be we do? In the operation, it's the how to. And then in the technical stream, it's the techie pieces. Show it to me. Show me the latest technology, all of those pieces.
So it's a lot of workshop-based as well as presentation and
absolutely,
speaker.
Absolutely. So there's three streams in parallel, so people can hop in and out of each module, if you like, every half hour, and they can go in and see something else. So if somebody wants to go for GDPR, they go and learn everything about GDPR. If they want to learn about the NIS directive, they go and they learn about that piece. They want to learn about banking, finance, and so on.
I was just going to say, GDPR must be like Christmas for you guys.
Well, ironically, it's one of those things because, tongue-in-cheek, what we did was we felt the GDPR hype was bigger than what the real issue was.
Yeah.
The government weren't really engaging on this. And so actually on May 25th we ran an event called Cybergeddon, effectively to take the pee out of what was going on about this whole GDPR, because GDPR is the tail wagging the dog. The big issue isn't about being compliant to be able to tick boxes, it's keeping your business secure and safe. And that's a bigger and a different remit than just ticking boxes around GDPR. Now, don't get me wrong, GDPR is an excellent way of getting these things going. But we'll only see if it's really effective if we see the Data Protection Commissioner follow up on these recent breaches. And so far, she's doing a great job in calling people out, including Facebook. She doesn't seem to be afraid of this thing.
Of anybody,
Yeah, and ultimately, we'll see the decisions made by judges.
And do you think I work in a big corporate organisation, and our IT director is always saying that, you have all the external things you're talking about, but he also says our own people are one of the biggest issues. Just people working for the organisation who, you know, plug something in that has something dodgy on it or leaves access open for somebody or gives somebody their password or whatever, you know.
Is that
an issue?
It's one of the biggest issues because there's what we call fat fingers. People can make mistakes when they're typing things. But the other type of thing we've seen is anything from scams where somebody would leave, let's say, for example, Near FM payroll written on a USB key outside here. Somebody finds it.
Yeah.
They come in, they pop
plugs
into
it
laptop,
in,
see what's going on. The other side of that is we're seeing what we call romance scams. So what these bad guys do, if they can't hack through your firewalls, humans are the last level and the last point. Yeah. So what they'll do is they'll try and hack the humans.
And the weakest point, really.
And the weakest point, really, because what they'll do is they'll take 6 months on social media grooming somebody because they know they work in a bank, talking to them, building them up, and then perhaps get something that they can leverage on them, like a video or something.
Yeah. Excellent.
Very good. Listen, Paul Dwyer, we wish you the very best. And you've been a brilliant guest. And thank you very much for coming in. And I say
thank you.
In all honesty, it's a very interesting subject. And we wish you the very best. And look, tell us the date again, please, before you go.
It's October the 24th. And your listeners can find out more information at EUCybersummit.com. That's EUCybersummit.com.
That's great. Just before we go, Declan, inflation is on the rise.
Yep.
And new figures from the Central Statistics Office showed that the rate of inflation in September hit its highest level since May 2017, with consumer price growth growth of 0.9%. The annual rate of inflation rose in September on the back of higher rents and increased price of home heating oil, electricity, gas, as well as higher prices for diesel and petrol. The economist Alan McQuaid said it appears to be the same across the Eurozone, which he suggested that the European Central Bank would be in no hurry to increase interest rates. So well, the interest rates will stay the same.
Absolutely good news. That's it for this week for Nearby Business. Thanks a million to all our contributors this evening. We'll both be back with another Nearby Business live at the same time next week, 6 p.m. Thursday evening. In the meantime, don't forget, if you have a comment on any of the stories featured today or an idea to discuss with us, you can get in touch anytime on Twitter. Hopefully it's secure at @nearby_business #localbiz. So for myself, Declan Ralph
and Dave Daly,
see you soon on the radio.
Thanks for listening.
Bye bye for now. Bye bye.